are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Friday, April the 19th, and happy Stevie Y Day to the Detroit sports fans out there. Hey, it's one of those days you can feel good about being a Detroit sports fan. There's nothing about wins and losses, hopefully yet, for Red Wings fans, but you know, the brighter days could be ahead. You got the Pistons in town for a couple of home playoff games over the long weekend too. So, you know, some reasons to kind of be a little bit excited for Detroit sports fans. And we welcome all of those. Tigers get the win on Thursday night or Thursday afternoon, by the way, too. But this is your boy, Matt Shook, suffering alongside you as a sports writer here in Detroit City, covering the NBA for the Detroit News and the Associated Press. Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for the listen. Thanks for spreading the word, getting this one out on Friday midday. I know you're accustomed to the Friday first thing in the morning. Appreciate that. But sometimes it bees like that when things get a little busy in my world. But today we're going to run down Thursday's NBA action, look ahead to the weekend as well. And we're going to do it. We're going to talk a little bit about Andre Drummond. I know there's just kind of a polarizing debate about Drummond out there. And some people are totally in and some people are totally out. It's a little bit gross. But we are going to talk about where he stacks out and kind of stacks up with some of the other centers, what the environment is like about him right now. And again, it's a well-worn topic. I don't have a million hot takes about it, but just kind of size up where the debate lies right now and where things stand on the Pistons star center. We're also going to hit the Google Voice line for a couple of callers, some of our favorite guys as well. But give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, and then another underscore after that. That's the Twitter handle to check me out. And also check out the show's Twitter handle at Locked On Pistons. I came up with that one myself on a day that the creative juices were really flowing. So Locked On Pistons. I actually did not come up with that myself, but I like to take credit for it. And then give me a like on Facebook at Locked On Pistons Dash. Matt Shook, want to pump up the Facebook presence as much as possible. As you know, the working journalist has to be everywhere these days, so we're trying to get into your life as much as possible. But the Pistons back in action on Saturday night, 8 o'clock at Little Caesars Arena. We'll talk more about that mostly in a little bit, but wanted to pass along the line for the degenerates out there. Pistons underdogs, if you can believe that. Just kidding. 8.5-point dogs for the home team Pistons. The Bucks coming in as favorites on the road, as one would expect from the top-seeded team, up 2-0 in a commanding series so far in the first round. So that means 8.5, that's an 11.5-point spread on a neutral court. That comes after Game 2 was a 15-point spread on the road for the Pistons. So that's a 12-point neutral court advantage, and was 15.5 in Game 1 dropped down to, I believe, 15 as well. So the Pistons are chipping away at Las Vegas, down about 0.5 here, probably because of that strong first half that the Pistons had on Wednesday, but also maybe because Vegas kind of sees the natural inclination of teams that are up 2-0 in a commanding series to possibly take the foot off the gas a little bit. But the way the Pistons are chipping away at Vegas, we might see playoff lines at like 7.5 next year, maybe something like that. We'll be owning Caesars Palace someday soon, that's for sure, as the Pistons are taking Vegas over. But in other action on Thursday night across the league, the Philadelphia 76ers beat the Nets 131-115, taking a 2-1 series advantage for the 76ers there, regaining home court advantage against Brooklyn with the road win. A lot of folks out there asking me if I think Brooklyn has a chance, and got quasi-excited about this series after they got the Game 1 win. I was not there. I am not there on that one. Still thinking that this is Philly's to win, no doubt about it. But 31 points for Ben Simmons in the win, 29-16 for Tobias Harris, a former Piston there, former beloved Piston, 26 points for J.J. Redick in the win. Joel Embiid did not play because of an injury. So, starting in his place, who else but Greg Monroe. Moose with the playoff start, and of course we know that James Ennis and Boban also coming off the bench for Philly, getting big minutes in Boban's case, 14 points for Marjanovic, who continues his magnificent series. So with former Pistons in Tobias, Moose, Ennis and Boban. That's a Gus Macker team. Maybe we should have them play throughout the Gus Macker summer tour as former Pistons, now with the Philadelphia 76ers. The team, by the way, that I selected to win the NBA Finals before the playoffs started. Now you know that that's a little bit of a dig at the Golden State Warriors. And if you know me, I'm also making a little bit of a reverse jinx on the Milwaukee Bucks. The team plays, the team slated to play the Pistons in the first round. So that was kind of where my head was at there. But yeah, sure, I still believe that it could happen for Philly, and we'll see how this postseason shakes out. But for the Nets in the loss, 26 points for D'Angelo Russell. And speaking of former Pistons, really Stan Van Gundy's first draft pick and probably only great draft pick, Spencer Dinwiddie, had 15 points there in the loss. But moving on to the Lone Star State, the Spurs bounce back in a series that's been back and forth, 118-108 with the win at home, getting the home win again to go up 2-1 on the Denver Nuggets. This one might go seven, so I got to get locked into this series. I didn't watch any of the games. Play a little pickup basketball myself on Thursday night, first time in a couple months. And my quick advice for pickup basketball is if you play it, if you're one of these college kids still doing the intramural scene or the open run at the rec scene, I would just say stay on it. Don't ever stop playing pickup basketball. But if you haven't played in a long time, like your boy Matt, maybe just don't ever start. So don't stop if you're playing. Don't start if you're not, unless you've got a good attitude about it going into the dusting off your career a little bit, because you're just going to be terrible for the first game. Everything's going to be off. You're going to see things you can't do. You're going to move slower than you want. Your passes are just going to be a little bit slower. Like I said, you're going to see things. Your body can't do it. It's going to be frustrating. Your touch from deep is going to be off. So it's kind of like you got to be prepared to be terrible for at least a couple outings. Slowly but surely get back into it a little bit, and you're not going to get any type of form you'll be satisfied with for, like, you know, six or seven times back on the court. So just know that in advance and be prepared emotionally and mentally for that reality. So that's my little life advice in terms of pickup basketball. But anyway, back to real basketball. 36 points for Derek White, the number 29 overall pick in the draft, by the way. It can be done if you draft correctly and draft wisely. No former Pistons in this game, although the Spurs do have, interestingly enough, a guy that I've totally forgot about and thought was out of the league and got 4 minutes of action at the end of the bench for the Spurs on Thursday night. Donatas Montiunas, who Pistons fans might remember as the guy from Houston back then that Stan Van Gundy tried to trade for, but thankfully failed the physical on his back. Well, I shouldn't say that, obviously. Unfortunate for Montiunas that he has back problems and it's kind of derailed his career in a lot of ways, but the three-team trade broke apart. That trade would have had the Pistons sending the 2016 first-round pick for Montiunas, which is a disaster. But the good news is, I don't know, good news, horrible news, look into the abyss news if you're a Pistons fan, that they ended up drafting Henry Ellenson anyway. So no huge loss either way, I guess. Mitigated what would have been a bad trade by drafting a bad player instead with the bad trade that didn't happen. The Stan Van Gundy front office era, right? The amazing SVG making all the moves. I got into a little Twitter spat myself with Hal Bridges, who, and I still am thinking there's like a 5-10% thing that this is all satire on his part, that Hal Bridges has got a little revisionist history saying that, not arguing that Stan Van Gundy was a good GM, but saying that he was just kind of typically average, I guess, or possibly just kind of regular bad, like all sorts of GMs are out there. Now, certainly there are a lot of bad GMs out there, but to revisionist history that Stan Van Gundy did a good job in the front office. And again, a guy who made a lot of savvy trades, took advantage of a suddenly advantageous cap situation to acquire Reggie Bullock and Marcus Morris. And some of the trades were good, some of them weren't disasters. Reggie Jackson, the three-teamer with Oklahoma City, not as good as it was after 2016, certainly, and kind of have this the Pistons, and with the subsequent re-signing of him, have the Pistons in a little bit of this quagmire that they're in right now. But, I mean, my main point is that, hey, if you're fronting a front office for 4 years and don't have, like, a single good draft pick to lean against, other than Dinwiddie, who you gave up on as an organization anyway, probably for right, you know, for good reasons. But at the end, you know, here's a guy who's now a fringe all-star that we had in our grasp. And then, you know, the Luke Kennard pick, you know, we can revisit that. But obviously the Donovan Mitchell trump card is the one that everyone's going to pull out correctly when analyzing that trade, or I'm sorry, pick. And then the fact that in 4 years, he didn't really make any single good free agent pickups. I mean, Aron Baynes notwithstanding, but certainly not someone who moved the needle. And when you think about the dead money and all the bad money that's out there on this roster, yeah, again, don't want to spend too much time on it, but it's you'd have to do a lot of mental gymnastics to talk yourself into Stan Van Gundy being anything other than a absolutely terrible general manager and front office executive for the Detroit Pistons. Moving on, the Warriors get the win on the Clippers, 113-105, Durant with 38. That one is now 2-1 Golden State, 21 for Steph Curry in that one. Jonas Jerebko, former Piston, played 8 minutes, did not score in that one. For the Clips, 18 for Zubac, a stud right there. I wonder if the Pistons front office kicked the tires on him before making the Reggie Bullock trade for Sofie Mykhailiuk. That's because the Lakers obviously were willing to part with him. They did give him up to the Clippers for like nothing at the trade deadline during that time period. No former Pistons on the Clippers, which is strange because we made the Blake Griffin trade with them. Although the pick we did trade for them was then traded itself to move up for the pick for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who looks like a fine young point guard. The Pistons pick actually ended up being Miles Bridges, more of an uneven rookie season in Charlotte. While everyone plays this weekend, starting with tonight, Raptors at Magic tonight at 7 o'clock on ESPN. Raptors 5.5-point favorites there. Celtics Pacers, 8:30, ABC. Indiana 2.5-point favorites at home. 9:30 tonight, Trailblazers and Thunder on ESPN, the one that I have my eyes on the most. Thunder 7.5-point favorites at home there. Saturday and Sunday, 4 games apiece. Everyone's playing on Saturday or Sunday. 3 games on Saturday starting at 3 o'clock. Those games are going all the way to a 10:30 start there. Sunday, the games start at 1 o'clock on Easter Sunday. 9:30 start is the last one there. So, again, happy Holy Week to you guys who are into that kind of thing. Enjoy your Easter holiday if you got those family plans. Your boy Matt will be working at Comerica Park all weekend, spending Easter with the Tigers, hoping to get to Saturday night's game for the Pistons as well at Little Caesars Arena. But up next, we're going to talk Andre Drummond, the hot-button issue for Detroit sports fans. But you can get the Locked On Pistons podcast on the brand-new podcasting app Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And when you get in your car, go ahead and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Pistons.
Yes, sir!
A little bit later on, we'll be hitting the phone lines to talk Detroit Pistons playoffs, other playoff series, looking ahead to the offseason as well. But it sounds like Pistons Twitter is mobilizing, getting together for Saturday night's game. Wanted to pass that along. And Johnny Kane of Fox Sports Detroit comes through dangling the carrot for the Rabbits to show up to the game. And the Twitter account Pistons Thoughts looks like he's kind of doing a job of organizing things and basically has the details posted here saying that for Game 3 on Saturday night at Little Caesars Arena, if you're a member of Pistons Twitter or a listener of the show and want to meet up with some of those guys, again, I'm not sure if I'm going to be even at the game on Saturday night as it stands. I'm going to be in Comerica Park for the 1 o'clock Tigers game, probably going to walk across the street to the Pistons game, I would imagine, as a paying customer. But maybe the game, a lot of rain in the forecast. Who knows what's going to happen with that Tigers game. So, but anyway, they're congregating about 30 minutes before tip, 7:30, at the concourse level. I think right at the entrance there, I guess I want to say the northeast entrance. I'm not sure which company has that designated entrance there, but that seems like the, kind of the main entrance and where the cameras will be there for Fox Sports Detroit. Johnny Kane is going to meet up, I believe, and put guys on television. So the fame of Pistons Twitter will now translate to the fame and fortune of television. And so I'm interested to hear how that goes and maybe look for you guys on TV too. So have fun, drink responsibly or don't drink at all, and enjoy Pistons playoff action this Saturday. Like I said at the top of the show, hey, it's fun. It's a good time. Hopefully the Pistons can respond with a nice effort. I saw articles on Thursday that were saying only about 1,000 tickets available for the Pistons opener, which dictates to me that there might be a nice crowd at Saturday night's game. you know, sometimes teams might be a little bit less than honest about those kind of things. If you hear a number like 1,000 tickets, maybe that's kind of a ruse to drive home the immediacy that is attached to these tickets at this time. So, you know, who knows? I'm not sure about that kind of thing, but we'll see what that crowd looks like on Saturday night. But speaking of Twitter, I'll tell you about my other Twitter argument on Thursday. And by the way, sometimes myself and everyone else, we just need to put the app down. I was at a baseball game covering the Tigers, so it's sometimes when you're watching a baseball game, there's not much else to do but to scroll Twitter, especially when you're not even writing the game, or I was just covering the losing team for AP, which is like a cake of an assignment. So the debate that I had kind of coincides with the fire debates that are going on about Andre Drummond right now. Pistons Twitter is just up in arms with the takes, the defense of Drummond, the complaints. And like I said, most of it is basically just centered around Andre, who's a lightning rod for this organization. And it's something that basically could be a real problem for this team and this fan base as we think about trying to attract more of the casual fans. Well, if Andre Drummond's the centerpiece of this organization going forward, that might be a bit of an issue. And it's no fault of his, because he's a player who's steadily improved basically every year throughout his career, kind of trying to add new elements to his game. Some of those shortcomings aren't getting cleaned up as quickly as a lot of fans would like to hope. And a lot of fans out there, or former fans, I guess might be a more accurate way of describing them, are being unrealistic and unfair about Andre Drummond, with still kind of slapping him with the doesn't try enough label or doesn't try at all label. I just think that's an irrational thing to think about. And if you're watching games closely, you're clearly not seeing a guy that I'm seeing. And there's been games, and not every game, but there's been games this season and a handful of games this season where I have said in the fourth quarter, while Andre Drummond continues to make plays, how does this guy still have any energy left in the tank? He's just leaving literally all of it out there. When you take into consideration the sheer size of the guy and how, you know, difficult it is for big men to move around a lot of times, his natural athleticism is unbelievable. And sometimes his tank is unbelievable, which is something that you would have a hard time believing that you were saying maybe as a second or third year player, when his try hard, his give a crap maybe wasn't at the level that it needed to be at that time. I went to the Memphis game in which he saved the season for the Pistons. I know that's a silly game, a game that the Pistons had no business falling behind as much as they did against that G League component of players. But to Andre's credit, in that third quarter especially, and carrying into the fourth quarter, he dragged this team across the finish line of the playoffs. And I know it's just the eighth seed. I know it's just 41-41, and no one in Pistons Nation is saying that that was a good enough result for this team in this season, and that no one's satisfied about where this franchise is at right now. But for him to pull his team single-handedly across the finish line like that, I was in the fourth quarter watching him battle for offensive rebounds, saying, how does this guy have anything left in the tank? How does he have any energy right now? And again, with this debate and kind of everything around Pistons Twitter, I think we're all ready for the offseason here. It's been a stressful time. The other Twitter argument I had, just long story short, was with Dan Feldman of NBCSports.com, the former host of Locked On Pistons. Rod was kind of, to his credit, Rod Beard of Detroit News was kind of trying to water down the flames a little bit and just kind of threw out a generality and said that Andre Drummond is a top 10 center. And again, to me, it was more of a theoretical title, but Dan kind of challenged him on it and said he wanted some clarity. So he rattled off a list of 10 centers and asked Rod, okay, so if he's a top 10 center, who is he better than on this list? And certainly there's guys on this list who are slam dunk guys better than Andre Drummond: Joel Embiid, Anthony Davis, Nikola Jokic, of course, being in that group. But Rod responded by saying Anthony Davis, in his mind, is a forward. So he's not a center. He's not in that debate. You know, at this point, you're splitting hairs. Actually, if I had to characterize Anthony Davis as something, I'd say he's a center. But again, splitting hairs there. But and then Dan threw out some other names, of course, in his 10-man list: Rudy Gobert, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Karl Anthony Towns being in the next tier, in my opinion. And I agree. I believe that those guys are better than Andre Drummond. Gobert, just you know, kind of the gold standard of defensive centers in this league. Although, you know, a role player offensively, so, you know, certainly not a transcendent player. LaMarcus Aldridge, a guy who offensively just has games where he kind of takes over. So credit to him. I believe he is better than Andre Drummond too. And although Andre Drummond makes Karl Anthony Towns his son every time he plays him, it's just one of those bad matchups for Karl Anthony Towns. I have dogged him on this podcast and will continue to dog Karl Anthony Towns because I do feel like he's overrated. But that said, I do agree that Karl Anthony Towns is a better player than Andre Drummond. But that is something that I could be flexible on going forward, depending on how these careers turn out. So, okay, I'll give you those top six, no doubt about that. But then you get into that next group where it's Al Horford and Miles Turner. These are guys where I could go either way on it. Miles Turner has certainly turned into an elite-level defensive player for Indiana and has flashes of being that second or third option offensively for a very good team. Al Horford certainly getting a little bit older now, certainly not much of a future there, but if we're talking about right here and right now, a guy who fits in with a great system with the Boston Celtics as a facilitator, as a guy who can knock down threes, and again, kind of a leader, obviously, with the Boston Celtics as well, a team that's had a lot of success over the last couple of years. Now we're getting to kind of that murky part of the debate where a guy's on a good team, so does that mean he's a much better player than this other player? He brings tools that are conducive to the modern NBA, maybe more so than Andre Drummond. Does that make him a better player, or does the fact that Andre Drummond's the second best, and right now in this playoff series, obviously with Blake out, and during the stretch run with Blake was struggling and or not playing, that Andre Drummond pulled, and like I said, kick and scream this bad playoff team into the postseason. So now we're kind of splitting hairs. I put Andre in that tier. Again, splitting hairs about who's better between Horford and Miles Turner. Miles Turner, a guy who's never made an all-star team, really never even been considered for an all-star team. Al Horford, who, the Celtics are just a complicated argument in that is Al Horford a great player or are the Celtics a very good team, right? There's been half seasons where Al Horford has been certainly better than Andre Drummond. And I would argue there's been half seasons that Andre Drummond has been certainly better than Al Horford. But again, I'm not going to kill anyone for where they stand in this debate. Nick Vucevic for Orlando, a guy that doesn't have as big a track record, a guy that became an all-star this year, and certainly in a contract year is showing flashes that he's here to stay as one of the top centers in the league. But again, no track record, not a guy who dominates games, is playing as the arguably the best player, one of the top players on a team that's right with the Pistons in terms of being that fringe playoff team, a little older than Andre Drummond. Again, splitting hairs, I put Andre Drummond ahead of Nick Vucevic. Again, one might argue that his skill set is more indicative and more helpful to a winning organization, and I can understand that argument, but to me, that doesn't necessarily put him at better player status, that in and of itself. But the last name that, and this is where I kind of quibbled with Dan, is he threw out Lopez. And I think it's a tell, first of all, that I wasn't immediately sure which Lopez he was referring to. I'm like, Robin Lopez isn't very good, but it became clear that he was talking about Brook Lopez. And let's not confuse the fact that he's on the Milwaukee Bucks and he's the fourth, probably fifth best player when you throw Brogdon in the mix, and certainly not one of the top three players on that team. Let's not confuse that with the fact that Brook Lopez is this great player or fringe all-star or something like that. There's a reason he got a one-year deal for $3.2 million. Clearly, that's an undervalue for him, but let's not correct course and say this guy deserves anywhere near max money or all-star consideration or a four-year deal or for big money or something like that. He's a role player. He's a guy who's playing his role very well. Yes, he stretches the floor as a center, but he's a 36% three-point shooter. He's not a guy out there that's really, and certainly that's a good thing. It's a difference maker for the Bucks, but he's not an elite shooter. And the fact that he can stretch the floor so Giannis Antetokounmpo can have driving lanes, so Eric Bledsoe can have driving lanes, it's a valuable skill. It works for the Bucks. It works for what the modern NBA should be. But let's not say that because he's a league-average three-point shooter, he's into this elite center conversation. And yes, he's good around the rim defensively, but he's not a guy who's he's not Rudy Gobert underneath, and he's not someone who's versatile defensively who can guard some of these by the way, modern centers that he has to go up against night in and night out. Andre Drummond, an elite rebounder, best rebounder in the league, a guy who's developing every season offensively. He's become, took care of his free throw bugaboo, becoming really, and to his credit, more of a post option late in this season when he was making this run, has the energy to impact games on the offensive rebounding glass, is a decent distributor if you're ever to throw him in the high post, which is something the Pistons don't really do anymore, but that skill is there as well. And someone who has been able to get out there and make Giannis Antetokounmpo's life not difficult, but a little bit more difficult than it is on a night in and night out basis. And again, the way that he played in the second half of the season, I think he would have, if there was an all-star team in the Eastern Conference, if they would have picked the all-stars again at the end of the season, which is not something that happens, then I think that he would have been considered and probably would have made that group this year again for what would have been his third all-star selection. He's a guy that deserved consideration for third team NBA, all-NBA, not going to get it and shouldn't get a vote for that. But in terms of making a list of the best centers in the NBA this year, I'd put him at like fifth or sixth right now and wouldn't have any problem doing that. So again, the Andre Drummond truthers on all sides of the debate are fast and furious right now. It's getting old and we're going to move on here. But remember, and despite, by the way, minus 45 and minus 32 in the first two games of the playoffs, that's not a thing. That's just him playing heavy duty minutes against the superior team. And Andre's been the best player for the Pistons overall. I mean, I know Luke Kennard's scoring a lot, but certainly not someone who's adding really anything besides scoring for the most part. And Andre Drummond's not playing great, but certainly someone who shows he belongs on the playoff stage. Remember, to get this show every day, go ahead and subscribe to the Locked On Pistons podcast on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to the Locked On Pistons podcast. Next, I'm going to hit the phone lines. That's up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day.
Hey, Matt, this is Bree Schnout in Philly. And to answer your question, I personally root for all of the former Pistons players, wherever they are. If they were a player I liked, I'd root for Marcus Morris in Boston, Dinwiddie. He ruined the season for us in a lot of ways. But, I mean, imagine if we had him. You know, Bobby had a great playoff game last night. There are, like, four Pistons players on the Sixers. Jeredko, even, in Golden State. But I understand rooting for any of those teams is really hard as a Pistons fan. So my answer is actually the Trailblazers, because they've been swept out of the playoffs the last two times, just like the Pistons. And if you live in West Michigan or have for an extended period, you know somebody who moved to Portland, Oregon. There's a huge West Michigan to Portland, Oregon pipeline. I don't know why, but I have three or four, like, speak-at-their-wedding quality friends, and I visit Portland at least once a year, just because I have so many friends out there. And as a basketball standpoint, if they don't give that Rasheed Wallace to us, we may not have the going-to-work era. And so they lost a huge injury. And, you know, give them a little love because the Pistons completely waxed them in 1990. So I root for the Blazers. I've always respected Dame Lillard. He doesn't want a super team join up. He's like, nope, this is my team. Nurkic is a great player, and it's sad that he went out. And I don't like Westbrook's an amazing talent, but I don't like him. So I want him to lose. So I'm rooting for the Blazers as my non-Pistons team.
Breeshin out in Philly, thanks for the call. Really agree completely that the Portland Trailblazers are a very likable team. I was a little bit late to the party with them, but I went out to Portland about 6 weeks ago. And yeah, the Moda Center is rocking. They're really into the Blazers there. And really kind of an underdog story in some ways, CJ McCollum. I look at the Detroit Pistons backcourt from the Bad Boys era, and I look at these undersized Blazers in the same way. Now, obviously, the defense isn't there in terms of Joe Dumars's great prowess on that end of the floor. And CJ McCollum is not Joe Dumars. Let's not get that twisted. But Dame Lillard, there's a lot of Isaiah Thomas, and he's no Isaiah yet for sure, but there's potential there. A guy who's undersized and really a guy who's not afraid to mix it up. He was jawing with Steven Adams the other night, and that was nice to see that the little guy has no fear of probably the guy who's maybe the most WWF ready out of anyone, WWE, I should say, ready of anyone in the league. So to see Damian Lillard go toe-to-toe with a guy like that really kind of says all you need to know about his toughness. And that's, like you said, 1990. That's a team that really respects their past as well. I went to the game, all sorts of, obviously, Damian Lillard jerseys with the kids and everywhere else, but the second most popular jersey was Clyde Drexler. I saw some Kersey jerseys, some Duckworth jerseys as well. You go to the team store and you'd think that Lillard was the best player on the team and that Clyde Drexler was the second best player on the team currently based on how prevalent that those items are available to purchase there in Portland. But yeah, Breeshin, thanks for the call. And thanks to all you guys for listening. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy some Detroit Pistons playoff basketball in downtown Detroit. And we will be back early next week to recap it all here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your host, Matt Shook, saying thanks to everyone for listening. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you guys on Monday. Have a good one, everyone.